A breakthrough in Catholic-Orthodox relations, or simply a small step on the long road to Christian unity between East and West? That's the question being posed following publication of the latest Catholic-Orthodox joint document, which examines the questions of authority and papal primacy, one of the key issues which provoked the schism between East and West almost 1,000 years ago in 1054. The document on ecclesial communion, conciliarity and authority was published last Thursday and is the fruit of last October's plenary assembly of the Joint International Commission for Theological Dialogue between the Catholic and Orthodox Churches.
Ecumenism is a very serious business, and if we look back over the history of the Church and realise how long established, sadly, our divisions have been, it stands to reason that if we're going to address those divisions, it's unlikely we're going to overcome them very quickly and suddenly.
Father Paul McPartlin is a member of that joint commission and professor of ecumenism at the Catholic University of America.
I would say, first of all, that the whole topic of authority, which of course is a vital question in the Church and in the relations between the Catholic and Orthodox churches, is set in the document very much within the very rich context of communion. The communion life that the Church has from the Blessed Trinity, especially through the celebration of the Eucharist. And this document begins by giving a very rich portrayal of the communion life of the Church, in which all the baptized share and all the baptized are responsible for maintaining the faith which is given to us by God. And all the baptized care for one another, share with one another, and live a life of communion. And within that life, of course, the Church has its leaders, and that's where the question of authority comes in, and the document stresses then that authority is given by Christ through the Holy Spirit to the apostles and then to their successors, the bishops, and that then this authority is transmitted into the life of the Church, and the Church then falls into a pattern of life. And indeed, the document makes a very rich statement about the Holy Spirit engendering within the life of the Church the structures which accord with its fundamental nature of communion. And so we then move on in this document to look at those structures. And we consider those structures at three levels within the life of the Church. First of all, within the local Church, of course, the bishop is the focal point, the protos, which is a word that we use quite a lot in the document, the first, the head, the primate, you might say, in the local Church. And then, of course, within a family of local churches in a given region, that's the next level, the regional level. There has, from ancient times, been the fact of regional groupings of dioceses within the Church. And this, of course, gave rise in the ancient Church to the patriarchates, and each region would have a patriarch. And he would be the protos, to use that word again, the first. He'd be the head of the Church in that particular area, very much amongst the local bishops, and so he would be engaged in a collegial relationship with the bishops in that region. And then, of course, by the same logic, we move to the universal level and think, well, in the universal Church, is there likewise a primate, a focal point, a protos, a head? And this document makes the very important statement that we acknowledge together that that structure indeed pertains also to the universal level of the Church.
This document then recognizes that the See of Rome, in other words, the Bishop of Rome, has this place of primacy. I mean, it seems like an enormous step forward. Some are even suggesting that we're almost looking reconciliation in the face, but it's not quite as simple as that, is it?
No, it isn't as simple as that. There is a very great deal of discussion that still has to go on. And indeed, we agreed in Ravenna that the topic for the next phase of the dialogue would be the role of the Bishop of Rome in the communion of the Church in the first millennium, the time of the undivided Church, as we say. And then, of course, from then, we will have to go on to consider the role of the Bishop of Rome, presumably, in the communion of the Church in the second millennium, how it was then differently viewed after the schism of 1054. And then we will have to see, presumably, how we might embrace that role for the Church of today. So there is a very long track of dialogue that still lies ahead of us. But this, I think, is an important starting point, and it's very much a document in which we've established a firm basis for future discussion. There's a solid basis here. We've acknowledged that there is such a thing as primacy at the universal level in the Church, although we say very carefully in the Ravenna Statement that East and West have different ways of understanding this primacy and different ways of justifying this primacy historically and theologically. But the fact of primacy, the fact that there is a protos at that universal level in the Church, is something that we have been able to acknowledge together. And that does mean that we have a very significant common statement there from which we can go on to discuss, well, what sort of protos is this? What sort of prerogatives attach to this office? And of course, as we know, Catholics and Orthodox would have very different understandings that they might want to bring to that discussion.
Significantly, this decision, this document, comes as the Orthodox Church itself is struggling with the question of primacy, with discussions or quite serious differences of opinion between Constantinople and Moscow, for example.
Yes, there were difficulties at the Ravenna meeting because the delegation from Moscow said that they were not happy sitting down to take part in the dialogue if there were delegates there from the Church of Estonia, which is recognized as autonomous by the Patriarchate of Constantinople, but not by the Patriarchate of Moscow. So there were indeed difficulties there, and as Catholics, of course, it's not for us to enter into those difficulties, but simply to say that we're sorry that there are those difficulties, and we hope that they can be resolved. And I think, for me, the existence of those difficulties and those tensions just shows how much both Catholics and Orthodox, we need each other. We urgently need to reestablish the full communion of all the Church together, both East and West.
Significantly also, Pope John Paul II called for Christian leaders to have precisely this discussion of how the primacy can be at service of all Christians, didn't he, in his document Ut Unum Sint?
Yes, well, that was very much a landmark statement and invitation from Pope John Paul in 1995 in Ut Unum Sint, and it very much changed the ecumenical landscape because the Pope, with great generosity and great eagerness, placed his own office into ecumenical discussion and said that he wanted to have that discussion. And as I say, that really changed the whole context of discussion about the papacy. It was no longer something that people did and felt that they couldn't actually bring this to the Catholic Church and say what they wanted to say. The Pope himself said, "I want this dialogue." And so, ever since then, there has been a new context, and very many discussions have been going on. Very many symposia, books have been produced. And the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has also contributed very much to that discussion, saying that the role of the Pope is to serve the unity of the Church, and that in each different age of the Church's life, the Pope will discern how best he can serve the unity of the Church. And that initiative of Pope John Paul in 1995 was itself a wonderful example of responding to the needs of today.
And my thanks there to Father Paul McPartland, Professor of Ecumenism at the Catholic University of America and member of the Joint International Commission for Theological Dialogue between Catholics and Orthodox.